Welcome to today's Boost Podcast with me, Graham Farmer. If you're new to this podcast, I interview music artists, label owners, heads of industry, software owners, to try and get you tips and advice to help you get further as an artist in the music industry. Weber's achievements could be measured by a number of respected artists who's worked directly with him over the years, including Laurent Garnier, John Digweed, Joseph Capriati, Huxley, Stefan Bodzin, Anna, Danny Tenaglia, just to name a few. His productions are featured on labels like Drumcode, Tronic, Bedrock, Knee Deep in Sound, Systematic, Suara, and many others. I caught up with him recently to talk about his new album, Straight Lines and Sharp Corners, in which he uses a combination of synthetic and organic sounds collected on his field recording expeditions. We chat about field recording, we chat about his production, how he went about the production, how he created the album, and talks about some of the tracks on the new album. I also asked him for a load of things that producers need to know. Let's dive into this conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
Hey, Weber, how are you, dude? You all right?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. It's great to have you on, and I'm excited to talk to you about your new album and learn more about you, basically.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me here.
How are you getting on with lockdown?
Yeah, it's been quite boring, but it's been an adventure. Let's put it that way.
So let's jump into it. If you can just basically tell people who you are, where you came from. Interested in where you sort of started listening to music and when you, like, when you started playing music and what that kind of looked like. And essentially just the start of your where you are now, you know?
Well, I'm from Brazil originally. I grew up in São Paulo. And then when I was about 16 or 17, I've been a musician pretty much as long as I remember, since I was a kid, basically. I started out playing the guitar when I was like 11.
Oh, sick.
And then...
Did you have lessons for that?
I tried. Actually, I had a teacher. I went to maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 classes, and then I dropped out. I also started to do... I started to learn the keys, and then I also dropped out after a month. Mm-hmm. You know, teenagers. And then, so then I decided to just go on by myself and learn by myself. And that's pretty much how I've learned everything.
What years was this? When, how long ago was this? When were you a teenager?
Yeah, so I'm now 40. So that's...
Oh, same as me. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm 40 in May. So, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So it was the early 90s, right?
Yeah, so no YouTube or online learning back then.
No internet. So there was all like trying to grab onto magazines, music magazines, and learning by watching your idols on TV. Like, you know, the MTV was huge back then. There was actually music on MTV.
So yeah, for sure.
You could watch the videos and try to learn, and I would be muting, stopping Metallica videos and trying to learn the solos, like, you know, by playing and pausing and watching.
That's cool.
That kind of stuff, you know. So yeah, and when I started, then I did this student exchange program when I was 16 or 17. I went to live in Australia for a bit.
Cool.
And that's when I kind of got involved with the club culture, I would say.
Yeah.
And I went to this club in Sydney, and I saw my first actual DJ playing techno. And from then on, it was just nothing else.
Who was that? Who did you see?
I don't know even the name of the DJ. I'm guessing it wasn't nobody that made it or was famous or whatever. It's just like a resident DJ.
Yeah.
Not just, but, you know, because it was pretty important to me, you know, that resident DJ. But, you know, it's, so yeah, I saw that that guy playing just some techno, which I never heard before in a set, like, you know, just based on techno. Because I wasn't really exposed to the underground scene in São Paulo. There was an underground scene in São Paulo at that time, but it was just something that was not in my my field, that was, let's say. And then when I went to Australia and then I got to explore different things, then I actually managed to do that. And I was super impressed by it. So then I came back to Brazil and started to buy vinyl. It was funny, just the other day, Josh Wink posted that it was 25 years ago.
Yes.
That Higher State of Consciousness was released. And I remember exactly, I saw that on, there was this show on MTV called Amp.
Yep, there was, yeah.
Yeah, and then I saw the video. I don't even think it was the video for Higher State of Consciousness. It was a video of Josh playing it somewhere.
Was that the one where he had the massive dreads and it was like,
yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I love that record. Like I pretty much pinpoint that one of that record and Outer Space as essentially, yeah, essentially the reason to why I do everything now. Like why Data Transmission is around is because of that record. So I saw it as well and I was just like, yeah, like, yeah, still it's an amazing record.
Yeah, it is. It was a game changer, I guess. You know, for people in our generation, I guess it's just it's something that changed things a lot. And Prodigy, obviously, that was another thing that was massive back then, and Chemical Brothers and stuff like that. So, you know, it's, you know, it was all kind of in the same time, and they were very exposed on stuff like MTV, for example. So yeah, it kind of started to reach a broader audience.
I remember going on a physics field trip, and we were in this, like, staying in this hall, and I had Higher State of Consciousness on my CD Walkman, and it was, yeah, just squeaking out the tiny little headphones, and everyone around me was like, "What is that madness you are listening to? What is that horrible screeching noise?" And I was just like, "Yeah, yeah, great."
What's wrong with you, dude?
Yeah. it was proper, yeah, like that.
Ah, yeah, man. So yeah, and then because he wrote that, and I remembered exactly, like, I was going around on regular music stores in São Paulo trying, "Hey, have you heard of this Higher State of Consciousness? Can I find? Do you have this?" It's like, what are you talking about? You know, all the shops. That was the response, and then that's what kind of drove me to look for and find specialized record stores. You know, like vinyl stores. And when I came back from Australia, I started to go to those shops and buy vinyl. And that's how I kind of got started to be interested and to slowly make my way into the electronic music scene. And I think that was pretty much the origins.
And then flash forward, you've had a couple of albums, both on Drum Code?
No, I had two albums on Tronic.
Yep.
First one was 2010, so yep, 10 years ago.
Yep.
Second one was in 2013.
Yep.
And then now on Drum Code, this is my third album, and it's out for a month now.
Yes, I've been listening to it a bit, and I really enjoy it, man. It's like, hats off. It's a great body of work. Let's jump in and talk about it. And like I said, obviously, there's a load of producers on this, so let's go as nerdy as possible. Let's give them a load of value. So let's just chat about the album. Let's talk about the concept and how it came about, and yeah.
Okay, so the concept was more, I kind of needed a challenge. That's one thing at this point, because it was kind of subconsciously that this whole, like, it's been 10 years since my first album came out, so it was kind of, you know, floating around in my consciousness, I guess, and then I needed to revisit my motives for working on those first albums, and actually the first one, because it's more, it was, I hold it more closer to my heart. And then I was kind of trying to revisit the reasons I worked on that album, and kind of try to understand really where it took me, what happened during those 10 years and what happened recently, most recently in my life, as both as a person and as an artist, and then understand, and I wanted to understand myself a lot better. And that's a path I've been on for the past 3 years.
Yeah,
I really try to dive into myself reflection, and then trying to understand a lot about myself, both as a person and as an artist, and what happens to me when I'm working on music, and what do I end up putting across in my music. So that's kind of a challenge that I wanted to take on with the album, to really understand myself and what I'm putting across, what I'm what is coming out of me through my music, and then making that as pure as possible. So
how did that process, like, how did you, like, was there a process behind that, or how did you, like, was it a flow diagram, like, yeah, how does that kind of break down? Like, this is I'm so interested in this.
Yeah, this was it started more because I did this retreat called Vipassana 3 years ago, and this was kind of life-changing for me, in a sense that I realized that I actually did need to go in and find out about myself, because I didn't really know myself anymore. You kind of get caught up in your day-to-day life, and you're working, and then you define yourself as a DJ, as a producer, whatever, and then you're just like working and dealing with day-to-day things, and you kind of forget about connecting with yourself, you know, and connecting with what you like and why you like the stuff you like, and this kind of things. And this kind of becomes important if you want to excel as an artist, if you want to make the best out of your work as an artist, because if you don't connect with what you really like, and if you don't understand what you really like and what and how that moves you, you can't really put that into your work. It's like you're putting out lies, basically. That's kind of what I realized.
I guess just churning out the same continuous, because it's
Selling
records.
Exactly, it's more like an instinct, rather than the truth, you know. And then after I did this retreat, I started to really understand that I needed to work on my myself. Knowledge, you know, and then I stopped even a little bit with the meditation to focus on philosophy and stuff like that. So really deep spiritual things behind all of the process. It's not just a music related project. After I started to do that, I started to really comprehend what touched me, musically speaking, on those first years when I really got connected with the techno music and with electronic music in general, and what I really liked about those things and how they made me feel. And I brought all of those feelings back up, and they were dormant, and then it came back to me as if I was relieving all of that. And then that's kind of the point where I decided to take on the album and say, okay, so from here, that's where it starts. I want to relieve those feelings through each of the tracks of the album and make and really try to put that across to other people so that they can experience something like that, so that they at least can experience something that is 100% pure and true, and not just club bangers.
Yes. Even if
they kind of are, in a way, but it's like they carry this emotional content together.
Just for the listeners, what sort of time frame did that whole process take you?
I started working on the project as a whole in April 2019.
Yep.
And I finished the last mix down in December.
Okay, cool.
So it was about 8 months.
Okay. And then, and the kind of the bit before, like, was that, so that's when you started the music, and then the before you were kind of on that journey before. Man, that's cool.
Yeah, that's when I felt ready to do it. But I also did like after I started in April, I was kind of going in a wrong direction with my thoughts, for example, on the writing of the tracks. So in June, I took another one of those Vipassana retreats to ground me back to what I was actually meaning to do, and then go back to the process as pure as possible.
Did you throw like the stuff you made in that first part? Did any of that stay, or did you ditch that stuff and then restart in June, or was there bits that you kept?
Some bits I kept, reworked some of them, but the one track that was completely finished in that period didn't make it to the album.
Yeah.
Not because I actually didn't like it or because it wasn't pure enough. Although it wasn't, but it's just because it had a sample and I couldn't clear it.
Oh, okay,
cool. It didn't make it in the end. Yeah. So.
And so the tracks, the album's 13 tracks. How many did you throw away that you did or didn't put in that you made that you just didn't work?
There were three tracks that didn't make it.
Cool.
Yeah, and then there was another one that I was planning on using. So yeah, in the end, it's like also because even though they made sense with the album, it's just better as an experience to make it less long.
Yes.
And so it's not, because, you know, like a conversation, sometimes it can be really interesting, but it drags on too long. And then if it's just snappier, it can get the message across better. So yes. The album was kind of, the end concept was pretty much like that. So there was trying to make it snappier, you know.
Like I see you've worked with Thomas Gandy. That's like, I've known him for such a long time. And how did that come about?
Yeah, with Thomas, that was the last track that was finished. I had this lyrics that I wrote because of this whole, like, you know, it was basically a political track. Even though I'm not that guy, like I don't really follow politics. I'm not a very I'm not active in politics. I'm not an activist, but it was just something that was kind of it's a feeling that gets to me that, you know, everybody's so divided and aggressive these days, like, and they are so much into politics and they're fighting and then you can see that in presidents and all that stuff. So people are more and more aggressive by the day. So I wanted to kind of write something about it that was still smooth enough and entertaining enough for people that is not super interested in politics like me.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the concept. And then I remember I worked with Thomas, actually not directly with him, but I remixed a track from Affect a few years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, which had Thomas vocals on it. And I remember how I loved the tonal quality of his voice and the way he used the effects that made it really trippy, but it was still kind of intense at the same time. And that's kind of what I was going for with the vibe of the vocals. So then I just reached out to him, and luckily he was up for it. And I had like a very short time to be able to record the vocals and deliver the track. And he was up for it, and he did it super fast. Like,
did you record him? Did he come to you? Do you record together, or did you?
No, I was in Brazil when that happened, and he was somewhere in Asia, I think, or. No, he was in Berlin already. And then he recorded those tracks. He recorded his vocals on his studio and sent stems. He also did a few other bits with the layering voice drones and making like pads with a voice, and I chopped those up and made them. I used quite a lot of what he sent.
That's cool.
And yeah, it was really cool and really easy to work with him again. It's like it was just it just fit, you know, one of those things when it just fits, and it was great.
That's super interesting. I love that whole process, and I love how you've come to the album, man. For all those listeners, you should go and listen to it now, because it's on your SoundCloud and Spotify, and go and have a listen, because it is an incredible piece of work. So yeah, again, hats off, man.
Thank you, man.
Let's dive in some tips from artists. What are the five things producers need to know?
You know, I think the first main thing is a vision. I mean, a producer without a vision is just an engineer. And then I think if you have an artistic vision about where you want to get, and it just makes things easier. So you know, working on developing your own style of production. Not even, you don't need to have like the same track over and over. Mm. Just like a style of production that is recognizable to people, and then people say, okay, that track is from X and Y. So they will know, even though the tracks don't sound the same. No, and that's one thing that I really think it's important as a starting point for any producer, is just to have a vision, you know. And the second thing would be to understand your tools, really know what you have, and really know how to work with them, so that you can actually translate the stuff in your head to the computer or whatever you're working on. So if it's a keyboard or if it's a groove box, whatever it is. So if you understand the tool really well, you are able to translate what you have in your head, and then you don't rely on using samples or stuff like that, like happy accidents. You can just basically get started with your ideas without relying on outside stuff. You can basically just just use your own material.
are you a fan of less tools but knowing them really, really well?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I've my studio now, I kind of have more than I need, that's for sure. But even though I've been collecting this collection of things for a while, I do know most of them inside out, and some of them I'm now taking the time to learn more because I have that time. But I'm also thinking that I don't need all these things, and it gets in a way of creativity. Like, the more you have, the more overwhelming it is, and the more you can get stuck because it's just so many options. It's the same with like plugins. The most plugins, they tend to do a lot more than they should be doing. So you open them up and you're like, oh man, let's just go through the presets, because it's just too many things going on. It just like, so if you, with instruments, it's less like that, because they are normally designed to be performance tools that you you look at them and you perform with them. So good instruments are designed to be performed. And then the design choices that the company that makes it take, you know, those choices, they are designed to limit the possibilities so that you can get to where you want faster. So you work together with the instruments. So you don't have all the options, but the ones you have are the ones that will shape the way you work with instruments. So that's what normally happens with instruments, and with plugins it's less like that, I guess. So, but yeah, so learning your things, that would be the second. Oh yeah, working on the creativity, of course, which would be taking breaks, taking a zoom out, you know, like giving a break when you're working on a project. Just go out, have a coffee, have a walk, go back in, listen again, fresh ears, just go take a shower, you know, stuff like that will break the routine of the way you're working. These little breaks, they really help with the vision I mentioned before. Like it helps you to realize, oh, what was I doing? This is just horrible. Or, oh no, actually, this is really good. It's worth to keep working on it. And so it's an interesting tool to give you.
Do you work out and do you exercise and do you meditate? I know you mentioned meditation before.
Yeah, I do. I did a lot of meditation. I have been out of it for the past year. The whole production of the album, I stopped meditating for a bit. And I just now slowly I'm getting back to it now during the lockdown. And because I don't want it to feel like an obligation. I want it to be natural. And that's mm-hmm. the whole point. Like if it feels like it's a job, then it's not really great. Because you're not going to do it right. So, you know, I'm letting it go back naturally.
That's cool.
And exercising. I did used to go to the gym, to swim. I did that. But then I also stopped during the album process. And just when I was about to go back, lockdown. So now I have to wait a little bit longer to go back to it. But I do take a lot of walks. I walk a lot. I don't have a car. Here in Barcelona, you don't really need it. And I live in the center, so everything I do is just around my house. There's plenty of good restaurants and cafes and all the shops I go to. They're all like around, so I walk quite a lot. And that helps. That helps a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
What did this album bring differently to the previous two albums?
Yeah, I mean, besides the whole self-reflection and more philosophical part, musically and sonically, you know, after 10 years, obviously you get a lot of experience. Hmm. So I have more access to equipment. So, and I have more knowledge, basically. So all of that could be applied to the techniques I used in the album and in the writing process, in the production process, in the mixdown process. So I'm able to offer more of myself, even because of the more advanced techniques that I could apply. So, you know, like doing the field recordings and using them to enhance the album, to make it more organic and more relatable, even if it's just a subconscious thing.
Mm.
And then, you know, using my synthesizers in a more personal way, like, you know, not like really creating all the patches from scratch, because I know what they do. So I went to each and one of them looking for a specific sound and then creating that sound. And it all comes back to that part of being completely true and pure and reaching out to whatever is inside of me.
If you're breaking down the process, how was that? Like, how did you sketch ideas out? How did that, did you kind of do that in the computer, or did you work out ideas on paper first? What was that process like?
That was very diverse. There was some tracks, like for example, Dove Rush. I did it, I was in a hotel room in New Zealand. So I was, I had a gig that same day and I just wanted to do something with the field recordings I had done that day. Mm-hmm. So I just took some of the stuff I recorded and then I put them on the project, and then suddenly there was a whole track. And when I came back to the studio, then I switched a few of the sounds, and then I obviously mixed it down and made it a final product. But I could play it on the same day. But then there was other things, like for example, Deluge. I had a hook, the main hook. It was recorded on my, like a jam on the modular.
Mm.
And so it was like, a half hour long. And then I just took that tiny little recording of of one of my oscillators here. And then I just loaded it into a sampler and I kept that in my library.
Mm.
And then when I heard that later on, like when I was already working on the album, I just okay, this is a hook. So then I put it onto the project and I developed the whole thing around nice. That tiny recording. So it was a very dynamic process. I didn't have like a fixed routine. I did use a lot of the field recordings on most of the tracks to add on to the groove or to like soundscapes, you know, stuff that would open up the, like make it more than electronic. So it was one of the...
What do you record your sound, your field recordings on?
I use the Zoom H6.
Oh, cool.
It comes with two different microphones and they do a pretty decent job of recording. Like one of the microphones have a really good low end capture. The other one is very good for stereo and really like spread out sounds so that you can really widen the stereo field of like a hi-hat, for example. You just record a you know, the waterfall. You cut a little tiny bit of that waterfall in stereo and then add it to a hi-hat, and it's just like super wide. You know, like if you use a 909 hi-hat, it's mono, but you add that waterfall sound to together with it, super wide, and still sounds like a 909 hi-hat. And that's the kind of things I've used a lot in the production.
That's really clever. Do you just wander about and look for stuff that interests you from a field recording point of view?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's just walking around. That's what another thing I like about the Zoom is that it's super quick. So if you hear a sound, you turn it on and press record and it's recording. So it takes, I don't know, maybe less than 10 seconds to 5 seconds, I'd say, to be recording. So you might miss like the first sound that you hear, but the if it's still going on, you can capture most of it. And that's why it's really important to have a recorder that's super quick. So yeah, when I'm walking around like in a new city, for example, I tend to just bring it with me because I never know what kind of sounds are going to be around.
That's cool.
And here in Barcelona, I would just go out for that. I would just bring the recorder and go out and looking for sounds. Or if I see like an interesting thing, like for example, in Brazil, my sister lives in this compound a few hours away from São Paulo, and it's surrounded by nature. And there's this like hut built with wood, and then with a ceramic floor. And then you just scrape the tree branches on the ceramic floor, and then the echo it makes with the hut. It's really interesting. So these kind of things, I would just go out and really try to pay attention to the sounds and objects that are around me that would make interesting sounds, and then just try to record those.
I've seen a few artists doing lockdown field record, making tracks out of things in their home whilst they've been on lockdown.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. I did record my washing machine, you know, this kind of stuff. you know, like the pressure pan, you know, these kind of things are always good to have and they're useful. I've used them on the album actually, and yeah. It's cool. It's fun, you know? It's found sounds, you know, they're fun.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen it a few times, and once I saw it the first time, it really, like, it's so interesting, like the amount of the stuff you can make just out of stuff that's just about, you know? And I really want more eyes to do that, you know? So super interesting.
Yeah.
And then I guess, yeah, so that kind of obviously progressed the sounds in this album much more than you had in the previous two.
Yeah, I think the first album I had one synthesizer, that was the Virus TI.
Yeah.
And I abused it on the whole album. And I used a lot of virtual instruments at the time and a lot of samples. The second album was pretty much all in the box, all just VSTs. I used Diva a lot for that, I remember. It was the tool I used the most on that second album. But this third one, I just really wanted to use all of my instruments and just really paint a portrait of everything I've collected during these past 10 years. So instrument-wise, knowledge-wise, techniques, all of that. So I wanted to really put that on the album and make it appear that way, you know, like make it, you know, obvious. So even like mixing with I have this tiny old Boss mixer that's really cool for distortion, but I mixed like the Brainflex interlude. It was completely mixed on it so that I would get that 90s texture. Yeah, nice. You know, like, and then I mixed a lot of the tracks on the Model 1, for example. So I summed all of the stems on the Model 1 to get this kind of analog, I wouldn't say worn, but glue, you know, like
yeah, nice.
It's like a glue, like a spatial something. And then with the filter, you can really bump the low end, like have it really nice and tight and round. So you know, different ways to explore the textures, the sounds, and then you know, I really wanted to put that in the album to make it like to make it a point, you know, as the evolution from the other two albums.
What if you obviously a lot of the producers that listen to this podcast have got a lot of time on their hands at the moment. If you were starting out with hardware, would you suggest any one piece that you'd that's good to start with?
It's a tricky one because there's so many options right now with stuff that does a lot. Because if you have one piece of hardware, I would imagine that would be interesting to have one that does quite a lot. So that you would really learn it and explore. That's what that was my case with the Virus, Virus TI. I guess it's still a very valid suggestion because you can do pretty much everything you want with it. It sounds modern still. I don't know how many years in, like 15, I guess, since it was released. So it still sounds very, it can still sound very modern or very vintage. And yeah, you can do pretty much anything you want with it. But there's like new synths from Korg, for example, the Prolog or the Milog that you can load into newer oscillators on those, and they're reasonably priced. Let me see.
Have you seen these new Behringer lookalikes? Yeah. They're super cheap.
They're super cheap. All those Behringer synths, they're kind of cool. You know, the Crave is super cheap and super flexible. And I recently got their 303 emulation and it's just spot on.
Is that? Like, that's cool.
It really is. It's great. But yeah, Behringer has all these cheap synths. They're not super versatile as because they're copies of old hardware. So like they're the tools you were gonna reach out to if you really want that sound. But then again, if I wanted to suggest like one piece of gear, I don't know, it's a tough choice right now. There's too many options that do a lot of things. Yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe the Korg would be a good option because it's affordable and good sounding, and that's the one that comes to mind, like, I mean, right away, like this. I'm trying to look around in my studio.
You've got a lot for the people that are listening. He's got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a modular system is also a very way to go, a good way to go. It's not cheap per se, but well, now with the Behringer stuff it's also cheap. But yeah. But it's a good way to get started because it's also very flexible. You can do a lot with a modular system, like stuff you don't even know. You know, you can get inspired every day by, you know, you have 5-6 modules. You can make those 5 or 6 modules behave very differently.
Yeah.
Every time you turn it on. So it's also something really interesting if you want to get and really learn about synthesis and learn about making your own sounds. Having a modular system is also good that way because it teaches you as you work with it. You know, it's a very interesting tool to have.
My friend's got one, and it's his is humongous now because he's been doing it been building it a long time. Every time I go around to his house, it's like another piece been added. And it's like makes this crazy crazy techno on it, which is amazing. But yeah,
It's addictive. But I tried to limit mine because I know it can get out of hand pretty quickly, and. But if you have like a small system and you really work with it a lot, then you really, you know it. And then you know what you can, so it doesn't become overwhelming, you know? Because if you have like a wall of modules, you look at it and you get lazy. Yeah. It's like I don't want to patch this shit up. You know, it's like, unless you're like you're more interested in that than in making music, then it's fine. If that's kind of a hobby, then yeah, sure, you know, why not? But me, I want to have finished music, you know, like more than I want to have patch cables, you know.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much. And go and listen to his album. It's incredible. Have a lovely time in lockdown, and I'll see you very soon.
Thank you so much.
Cheers,
see you soon. Cheers.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have, please go, if you're listening to an Apple podcast, please go and give it a rating, give it a thumbs up, share it. It really helps the podcast grow on Apple Podcasts and help it goes up the chart, which means we can get bigger guests with bigger numbers, and which gives you more information and more tips. Thanks so much again for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you next time. I've been Graham Farmer. Bye-bye.